Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has ordered the military to continue, quote, massive strikes against Gaza militants as a surge in cross-border hostilities runs into a third day. Four Israeli civilians and at least 15 Palestinians, including a pregnant mother and her baby, have been killed in this latest fighting. Israel says more than 600 rockets and other projectiles have been fired into Israel since Friday, prompting retaliatory attacks against 260 targets in Gaza. The flare-up comes just a month after a truce was brokered by Egypt and the UN. Dov Lieber is the Wall Street Journal reporter for Israel and the Palestinian territories. He joins us from Tel Aviv this morning. Dov Lieber, welcome to RM Breakfast.
Thank you for having me on. Thank you.
It's getting late there now. I appreciate your time. As I mentioned, Israel's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu shows no sign of backing down. In fact, his orders for massive, massive strikes. Has the fighting been as intense in the last 24 hours?
Well, this is actually the most intense fighting we've seen here since the war in 2014, the most fatal round of violence between the two sides. We see up to four dead Israelis, Israeli civilians, and over 22 Palestinians. It's really really difficult here, and it's hard to tell whether this will continue into the coming days. But we are already starting to see chatter about ceasefire. We had the leader of Hamas already discussing openly a ceasefire. It looks like this will end as many other or several other recent flare-ups have within about 2 to 3 days, and the two sides come to an understanding.
But Dov, there was already a ceasefire in place, that truce brokered by Egypt. In fact, I think while this was happening, Hamas and Islamic Jihad were in Cairo for ongoing talks about that ceasefire. So what triggered Friday's rocket fire?
Well, there are a few versions. The version we get from the security echelon and political echelon in Israel is that really this was about these negotiations, right, these understandings between Israel and Hamas, and there's a third party, Gaza's second largest militant group called Islamic Jihad, which is also part of the negotiations. According to the Israeli version, felt like it was being left out. So it was Islamic Jihad who on Friday targeted Israeli soldiers, Islamic Jihad snipers targeted Israeli soldiers from the border and injured these soldiers. And Israel responded, sparking this new round of conflict. From Hamas and Islamic Jihad, they would say that Israel isn't standing by the agreements it made in the previous rounds, and now it's moving forward in order to secure these understandings. These understandings could be anything such as increasing the amount of space Gaza fishermen have to fish, or increasing movement outside of the strip, or increasing the use, increasing the amount of electricity inside the strip. But nothing too big, nothing that really changes the status quo for both sides.
Do you mention this second group, Islamic Jihad? I must say I don't know much about them. We all know of Hamas, of course. Can you just briefly tell us a little about the role Islamic Jihad plays? Are they in coalition with Hamas, competition with Hamas?
So I think you might say both. They share a war room. Sometimes they give the perception that when they go and fight Israel, they do it together. But at the same time, they are a separate group. They are closer to Iran. They're funded and backed by Iran. But they're different from Hamas in the fact that they don't run the Gaza Strip. They're not a governing body. They're simply another militant group in the Gaza Strip that has historical presence there. So that's Islamic Jihad.
Okay. Hamas has confirmed that one of its commanders, Ahmed al-Qadari, was killed in a targeted Israeli attack, and I think Israel has confirmed that too. This was an attack on his car. This is reportedly the first killing by Israel of a top militant since the war 5 years ago, because at that point Israel abandoned its so-called assassination policy, didn't it?
That's correct. It abandoned that policy because it took a lot of flack from the international community for it. The fact that Israel's bringing back the policy, it's a way of stepping up, ramping up its threats or its true violence against Hamas. Israel is says it does not want a wider conflict, but it does want to reach what it calls deterrence, real deterrence, preventing Hamas from carrying or restarting these conflicts every month or so with Israel. And it believes the way to do that is to threaten its leaders.
So how significant would you say this targeting and killing, apparently, of this top Hamas commander, Ahmed al-Qadari, is?
I don't want to, you know, I would say that he was not a well-known commander of Hamas. Yep. I think most people here hadn't heard his name before. And I think that's intentional. You know, these are gradations of Israelis, again, ramping up. So it chooses a mid-level officer. He was in charge of, according to the Israeli army, of laundering money from Iran to militant groups in Gaza. So he doesn't have a big role inside the, you know, military infrastructure, but just the mere fact that Israel is announcing it's returning to this policy means that it's threatening Hamas's leadership more.
It's 23 past 6. Our guest is Dov Lieber, Wall Street Journal reporter for Israel and the Palestinian Territories in Tel Aviv. A part of the ceasefire deal that, as I said, when this was happening, Hamas and Islamic Jihad were in Cairo for talks with Egyptian mediators in apparently trying to prevent a ceasefire brokered in March from collapsing. The allegation is that that ceasefire, as you say, Israel agreed to ease up on the blockade of Gaza in exchange for a halt in rocket fire. Hamas was accusing Israel of reneging on that. Can you give us any sense of that? Had Israel actually eased the blockade? Was movement easier there for a while?
It did lengthen the amount of room that fishermen have in Gaza. It did carry a few things. We have to understand that all these agreements between Hamas and Israel are secret agreements, to be honest. We don't really know what they said. They don't publish, they don't tell the public what was really agreed between the two sides. All we know is that Israel originally, it created, widened the fishing zone to the longest it's been in over two decades, perhaps. So we know there was an agreement. Israel, in the past week, it decreased again this fishing zone due to a separate security incident. And that seems to be part of it. There's also money, millions of dollars that Qatar is supposed to bring into Gaza every month, and that helps pay the salaries for Gaza's employees. Now, this is the really important part. Apparently, this money did not make it into Gaza. The recent money from Qatar, and this is a huge problem because we're coming close to now. It's almost Ramadan now, and I think Hamas feels it needs to be able to pay its employees. It sees a chance to, again, ratchet up tension against Israel, maybe force them to make sure this money gets to Gaza. But Israel said that it really had nothing to, it's very complicated, but Israel said it had nothing to do with this money not making it to Gaza in the first place.
Dov, can I just ask you briefly and finally, because as I said at the beginning, Benjamin Netanyahu has authorized massive strikes. He's convened security cabinet, issued a statement saying it had ordered the military to, quote, continue its strikes and prepare for the next stages. All this comes 2 weeks ahead of Eurovision being held in Tel Aviv. What is that having any impact, do you think, on the timing of this conflict, and may have an impact actually on the running of Eurovision, couldn't it?
Yes, it could have. It's definitely having an impact on the time of this conflict. We can't say definitely, but I mean, the threats were from militant groups in Gaza that it could disturb the Eurovision, and it can disturb the Eurovision.
Oh, the world is watching too.
The world is watching for sure, and I'm sure the Israeli officials are well aware of that. A number of ministers today said that, you know, the primary thought here is Israel's security, and, you know, the Eurovision is secondary. But I'm sure in that cabinet room, the name Eurovision was tossed around a number of times before they made a decision about what to do.
Okay. Dov Lieber, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you very much.
Dov Lieber is the Wall Street Journal reporter for Israel and the Palestinian Territories in Tel Aviv. You're listening to RN Breakfast. It's 26 past 6.